You filed. You briefed the weather. You checked the NOTAMs. You loaded the approaches. You've got fuel to your alternate with reserve to spare. And then you tune the first vor on the arrival, and the needle sits there a couple of degrees off, and a small voice in the back of your head asks a question you can't quite answer. When was that receiver last checked? This is Radio Hangar. I'm Tower. And this is Atis, the show where we take the news and the numbers of this business and turn them into something you can actually use in the cockpit. Today, we're not chasing a headline. We're going back to a rule that's easy to forget and expensive to ignore, the VOR check. Because if you're flying instruments, that little box on your panel has a shelf life, and it's shorter than you think. Here's what you need to know. 30 days, that's the window before we get into it. Let me thank the people keeping the lights on today. Today's segment is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation challenge coins built to mark the milestones, discipline, and pride behind every step in flight. From first solo to airline transport pilot, every coin tells a story. AviationSoul.com. If you know a pilot who just earned a rating, that's the gift that actually lands now. Let's talk about the rule, and then let's talk about how you actually satisfy it, because those are two different conversations. The regulation lives in the Federal Aviation Regulations, specifically 14 CFR 91-171. The plain language version goes like this. If you're operating under instrument flight rules and you intend to use a VOR receiver for navigation, that receiver must have been operationally checked within the preceding 30 days. Notice what that does and does not say. It does not say every 30 calendar days on the first of the month. It says the preceding 30 days from the flight you're about to fly. Count backward. If today is the 8th, your check needs to have happened on or after roughly the 8th of last month. Miss it by a day, and legally that receiver is not available to you for IFR. It also does not apply to visual flight rules. If you're VFR, use the VOR, enjoy it. No 30-day check required. This is purely an instrument flight requirement. The reasoning is simple. Under VFR, you're looking outside and cross-checking against the ground. Under IFR in the soup, that needle might be the only thing between you and a granite cloud. The FAA wants to know it's telling the truth. This is where the headline doesn't tell the whole story, because check your VOR sounds like one task, and it's actually five different ways to get it done, each with its own tolerance. Let's walk through them, and I'll tell you which ones are realistic for the average general aviation pilot. Method 1, the VOT, that's the VOR test facility. You'll sometimes hear it just called a VOT. A VOT is a little transmitter, usually on an airport, that broadcasts one specific signal in every direction. When you tune the published VOT frequency and center the needle, you should get one of two indications. Either you center it with a FRUM flag and the course pointer on the published radial for that facility, or, the way most people remember it, you set 360, center the needle, and you should see a FRUM indication. Set 180, center the needle, and you should see a 2 indication. The memory aid pilots have used for decades is Cessna 180-2180. 2, it rhymes, it sticks, use it. The allowable error on a VOT check is plus or minus 4 degrees. If your indication is off by more than 4, that receiver does not pass, and it's not legal for instrument use until it's fixed. Where do you find a VOT? They're published in the chart supplement, the document that used to be called the Airport Facility Directory. There's a section that lists VOT facilities and frequencies by state. Check whether your home field or a nearby field has one. If it does, this is the cleanest, most repeatable check you can do, because you can do it sitting still on the ramp. Method 2. A ground checkpoint. Some airports have a designated spot on the airport surface, marked and surveyed, where you can taxi your airplane, tune a specific VOR, and the published radial for that exact spot is printed for you. You park on the point, tune the station, and compare what your box says against what the chart says it should say. Ground checkpoint tolerance is also plus or minus 4 degrees, same as the VOT. These points are, again, listed in the chart supplement. The airport diagram will often show you where the checkpoint physically sits. Method 3, an airborne checkpoint, same idea as the ground checkpoint, but it's a point in the air. The chart supplement publishes a location often referenced off a landmark, a specific altitude, and the radial you should be reading when you fly over that spot from the VOR in question, because you're now airborne and dealing with the realities of flying a precise point over the ground. The FAA loosens the tolerance a little. An airborne checkpoint allows plus or minus 6 degrees, not 4, 6. Method 4, and this is a variation on the airborne idea, flying a published airway or a selected radial over a known ground point. If there's no published checkpoint near you, the regulation lets you select a VOR radial that lies along the centerline of an established airway, then fly over a distinct identifiable ground point that sits on that centerline, at a reasonable distance from the station, and see what the receiver reads as you cross it. The tolerance there is also plus or minus 6 degrees. That one takes a little planning and an honest eye, because reasonably distinct ground point means you actually have to be over the point when you read the needle, not a half mile to the side of it. Method 5, and for a lot of pilots, this is the practical winner, the dual VOR check. If your airplane has two independent VOR receivers, you can check them against each other, tune both to the same VOR station, center both needles, or read both bearings and compare. The two receivers must agree with each other within 4 degrees. The beauty of the dual check is you don't need a VOT. You don't need a published checkpoint. You don't need to be anywhere in particular. You can do it on the ramp. You can do it in the run-up area. You can do it in flight 2 boxes, one station 4 degrees of each other, done. The catch, obviously, is you need 2 receivers to do it, and you need them tuned to the same usable station with a good signal. But if you've got the equipment, this is the one that fits into a normal pre-flight without a special trip. So those are your 5. Let me give you the tolerances one more time, clean, because this is the part people mix up when a Czech airman asks, VOT plus or minus 4, ground checkpoint plus or minus 4. Dual VOR against each other within 4, airborne checkpoint plus or minus 6, airway or radial over a ground point plus or minus 6. The pattern to remember, on the ground or against yourself, 4, in the air against a published point, 6. The air gives you the extra 2 degrees, because flying a precise point is harder than sitting on a painted line. Now here's the part that actually trips people up on a ramp check, and it has nothing to do with flying. The logging a VOR check that you don't record didn't happen as far as the FAA is concerned. The regulation requires that each check be entered into a record, and that record has to contain 4 things. The date, the place, the bearing error, and the signature of the person who made the check date, place, bearing error, signature. Some folks remember it as the initials, but the 4 items are what matter. You write down when you did it, where you did it, how far off it was, and you sign it. That record does not have to live in the aircraft logbooks. A lot of pilots keep a small dedicated VOR check log in the airplane, in the glove box, or the seat back pocket, and just add a line each time. That's perfectly acceptable. What matters is that the record exists and that it shows the check happened within the preceding 30 days of the IFR flight you flew. Let me say a word about the bearing error entry, because people leave it blank or write, okay, and that's not what's being asked. If you did a VOT and you are 2 degrees off, you write +2 or -2. If you did a dual check and the two needles agreed within 1 degree, you can note that. The number is the point. Okay tells an inspector nothing. The measured error tells them the receiver was actually functioning, and by how much this affects you if you fly a mix of VFR and IFR and you're not a high-time, every-single-day instrument flyer. Because those are exactly the pilots who get caught. You did your instrument currency, you're legal on approaches and holds, the airplane's annual is good, and then you launch on an actual instrument flight plan, and nobody has touched a VOR check in 6 weeks. The airplane's legal, the receiver isn't, and here's the modern wrinkle worth flagging. And I'll flag this as practical interpretation rather than a fresh regulation. A lot of you are flying with a GWAS GPS as your primary navigator now, and you may be thinking this whole conversation is a museum piece. Here's the honest answer. If you're not going to use the VOR receiver for navigation on that IFR flight, the 30-day check requirement does not attach to it. The rule is triggered by using the VOR for navigation under IFR, no VOR nav, no 30-day check. But be careful with that, because the operative word is intend to use, and instrument flying has a way of changing the plan. GPS gets a downgrade, an approach you didn't expect gets assigned, and it's a VOR approach. Air traffic control clears you direct to a VOR, or gives you a hold at 1. The moment you need that receiver to navigate, you needed it to be checked, and you can't retroactively make it legal after you're airborne. So my recommendation, and this is opinion informed by how these flights actually unfold, is simple. If the airplane has a working VOR and you fly instruments in it, just keep the 30-day check current, make it part of your rhythm. It costs you almost nothing and it takes 1 variable off the table entirely. Practically, how do you build that habit? A few options. If your home field has a VOT or a ground checkpoint, tie the check to something you already do, like the first flight of the month, and log it right there on the ramp. If you've got dual VORs, fold the dual check into your normal run-up flow, tune a strong station, glance at both needles, write the line. 30 seconds. If you fly with a partner or a club airplane, agree on where the VOR check log lives so nobody's guessing, and so 2 people aren't each assuming the other did it. And one more time on the thing that catches people. It's the preceding 30 days from the flight, not a calendar month. The last day of a long month can quietly stretch you past the window if you're counting on your fingers. When in doubt, count backward from today. And if the last check is on the wrong side of that line, it's a new check before you go. That's the rule, that's the 5 methods, that's the log. Not glamorous, but this is the kind of quiet discipline that separates the pilot who's merely legal from the pilot who's actually squared away. Today's breakdown came from the team at Bold Method, who put together a clear walkthrough of the VOR check steps, with the underlying requirements drawn straight from the federal aviation regulations. If you want to read the reg language yourself, and you should at least once, it's part 91-171. You can find more of what we cover over at radiohanger.com. So before your next flight into the clouds, ask yourself that small question in the back of your head, and this time have the answer. When was that receiver last checked? Write it down, sign it, then go fly. I'm Tower. Keep the needle centered.